101 degrees.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe, open for breakfast and lunch this summer from Tuesday through Friday. Staffed and managed by students, Bevere Cafe is located in Bevere Hall at Goodwin and Gregory on campus. Daily menus are available online at bevercafe.illinois.edu.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Triple-digit temperatures aside, the summer is not looking very sunny for retailers who market to the middle class. NPR's Wade Goodwin has the latest retail sales figures from the major chains.
If your store catered to the rich or your store catered to the poor or working class, you made out okay. It was the middle class who clutched their credit cards in their tight little fists, refusing to let go. Retail experts said that lousy weather was one factor in the lower-than-expected sales figures, but to coin a phrase, it's consumer uncertainty, stupid, that continues to plague the nation's retailers. Luxury stores like Nordstrom's tended to do well. Nordstrom's posted an 8.1% rise in sales, far outpacing the 4.7% increase expected. Discounters like Ross also fared nicely, Ross reporting a 7% increase. On the other hand, Macy's and Kohl's disappointed, with Kohl's reporting a 4.2% drop in sales. Specialty stores did better, however. Bath and Body Works and Victoria's Secret posted very strong 7% increases. With the important back-to-school season on deck, retailers are unsettled. If consumers demonstrate they're ready to spend, the summer might be saved. Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Dallas.
Now to London, where the Olympic Games begin 3 weeks from today. While the city will seek to showcase all that is wonderful about the London experience, there is a seedier side of the city. As part of NPR's Crime in the City series, mystery writer Mark Billingham takes reporter Vicky Barker to some of the places in London that inspired his dark, twisted thrillers.
A murderer stalks the homeless through a London night that, in author Mark Billingham's words, stinks of desperation.
He turned from Dean Street onto Old Compton Street, heading towards Piccadilly, past the cruisers and the coked-up media wankers, past a wild-haired wino breathing heavily and scowling at the world from the doorway of a fetish wear boutique. As he walked, he realised where that dull ache came from. It was the effort of staying self-contained that drained you, of keeping yourself impervious to the offers and the pleas, to the promises of pleasure of one sort or another.
Mark Billingham, reading from his 2006 novel, Lifeless.
So this is Leicester Square. Looks lovely now, doesn't it?
On a bright weekday lunchtime, Billingham, a stand-up comic, children's writer and crime novelist, retraces a murderer's steps and describes his own restless quest for settings.
You write a better scene if you've gone down to the place where it's set. I had to do some stuff right on the banks of the Thames. And I look to my left and there's a huge blown-up dead dog, you know, stuck in the sludge. It's blown up like a kind of space hopper, kind of snarling. And I look to my right and there's a beautiful heron perched on it. And I kind of think, you know what, I could have sat in my office for 2 or 3 hours and I'd never have made that stuff up.
The result, novels in which beauty and horror, tragedy and black comedy interlock. Characters drawn from society's margins collide with the law or with each other in settings which, though familiar to most Londoners, have been rendered sinister or disturbing.
It's fun to write about what's hidden, because it has this kind of facade. It's touristy and wonderful, and look, we've got the royal family and Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament, the Tower of London, you know, but you don't have to look very far to find not only a fantastically dark present, but a really evocative dark history.
In one novel, In the Dark, present and past collide when a gang of young black drug dealers falls foul of an old-style East End gangster.
This week's big issue, please.
In Billingham's book Lifeless, street people like this man selling the homeless magazine The Big Issue are not background color, but central players in a parallel society to ours, one Billingham discovered while researching the book.
There's a homeless opera company. There are homeless football leagues. There's a homeless theatre company. There's a whole world, a whole community, which I kind of discovered, with its own hierarchy. The drinkers don't hang out with the drug addicts. The drug addicts are suspicious of the people with mental illness. They're all suspicious of the immigrants. There's a real kind of society going on just beneath the surface.
The gates just arrived. The wicked.
As the tourists mill around Leicester Square, buying half-price theater tickets and bumping into nothing more sinister than each other, Billingham watches from his own darker vantage point, drawn from his years playing the local comedy clubs.
You come into Leicester Square at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and it's like the seventh circle of hell. You're like, just don't look anybody in the eye, don't look anybody in the eye. So looking up, it's how I kind of always imagined New York used to be. I was never a fan of cosy mysteries, of anything set in the countryside. You know, I just don't care. I'm a city boy. I grew up in a big city in Birmingham, and I want to write about a city. It's a much richer tapestry for me than Greenfield. Fields and wildlife make me feel ill. I don't want to write about that stuff.
Billingham has a lived-in face, a pierced ear. He speaks in quick staccato bursts, a raconteur's voice. Some readers may find his police inspector hero, Tom Thorne, less engaging. He seems more sketchily described than the criminals and the scenery. Billingham says he consciously chose to make Thorne a work in progress.
I really genuinely don't. The reader knows as much about Tom Thorne as I do at any one time. What that does mean is that sometimes he goes into areas that readers are uncomfortable with.
One of the most uncomfortable moments in his novels is a scene where Thorne is tied up and subjected to a very graphic sexual attack. And now Billingham reveals that he, too, was the victim of a violent attack a year before he started writing the Thorne novels. It happened at a hotel in the city of Manchester.
I got room service in this room one night, and there was a knock on the door about half an hour later, and I thought they'd come to collect the tray, you know, the empty plate. And there was three guys in ski masks, and they just burst in and said they were going to kill me and tied me up and put a bag over my head.
The men took Billingham's credit cards and held him there for 3 hours. He says the experience marked him as a crime writer in two significant ways.
In that first book, it was really important to me that the victim had a voice and was somebody that you cared about. And secondly, I think one thing I can write about pretty well is what it's like to be afraid. I'm pretty good on fear. I remember when I was tied up in that hotel room, I was bouncing off the carpet because my heart was thumping so much. I can remember literally bouncing on the floor. And so, yeah, I can write about what it's like to be afraid, I think.
Did that in any way inform your decision to start writing crime fiction? An interruption. A twitchy, rail-thin guy with X-ray eyes, right out of one of Billingham's novels.
Now, when I was walking down the road one day, I said, beautiful lady, she was ginger every day. I said, no, my darling, you look really cold. Do you want me to warm you up? She said, no, go away. I said, later.
There you go.
Yes.
That's London right there. That was very impressive. I mean, that guy, you know, I'm not being judgmental, but that guy's an addict. And there are a lot of characters like that wandering around. I don't know how he's going to fill up his day, but I kind of know where he's going to finish up tonight.
The police, by the way, never caught the guys who attacked Mark Billingham. He says they never came close. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign. Along with their dinner menu, tapas is served every evening until 2 a.m. Brunch is also served on Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 to 2:30. Information on menus and wine and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 6th of July, 2012. It was on this date, 1812, Ludwig von Beethoven wrote a passionate letter to an unknown woman who's come to be known as the immortal Beloved. He began, "My angel, my all, my very self, my heart is full of so many things to say to you. There are moments when I feel that speech amounts to nothing at all." For 200 years, scholars have been talking about the identity of the immortal beloved, whether it was Bettina or Josephine or Antonie. Josephine was a woman Beethoven was very much in love with at one time, Antony was unhappily married. She met Beethoven in Vienna, where she became ill, and he played piano for her while she lay sick in bed. He wrote the letters shortly before she moved away, and he never saw her again. It was on this date, 1957, Paul McCartney met John Lennon for the first time at the Walton Village Fete in Liverpool. John Lennon was almost 17, Paul McCartney 15. Lennon had a band called the Quarrymen. Though he had trouble remembering lyrics and he didn't know proper guitar chords, he'd learned how to play on a banjo. The band was playing at St. Peter's Church, and Paul told them that he could tune and play guitar, which impressed the Quarrymen, and Paul then performed 20 Flight Rock by Eddie Cochran and got all the lyrics right. The first official convention of the Republican Party was held on this date, 1854, in Jackson, Michigan. Nearly 10,000 people turned out in protest of the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which had provided for the expansion of slavery into the new Western territories. The Republicans settled on a slate of candidates for the upcoming congressional elections, did well in that election, winning almost 50 seats, and soon had a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. And it was on this date in 1892, striking steelworkers clashed with Pinkerton security agents in Homestead, Pennsylvania, the Homestead Strike, which resulted in 12 deaths. The steel mill's manager, Henry Clay Frick, had locked workers out of the plant after he cut wages and told the union he would no longer negotiate with them. The strike did not end until the following November, when the striking workers ran out of money and they had to return to work. Here's a poem for today by Gary Young, As If the Sky and High Plateaus. As if the sky and the high plateaus were not enough, here is a canyon colored like a child's box of crayons. There are strata of purple, scarlet, yellow, and beige. Small buttes that look like wedding cakes rise up out of the gorge, each layer distinct and otherworldly. There is a shade of green in the small hills surrounding these outcrops I have not seen anywhere else. There are traces of sage, olive, turquoise, the sea, but also sulfur, graphite, and blood. A huge portion of the mountain has fallen away from the side of a cliff, creating a natural amphitheater. Echoes are amplified and return resonant and strong. I sit and listen to the split-tailed swifts that nest in the cliff. They whistle, and the echo